Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
We could turn it off and start it over.
Yeah. Well, in effect, that's what I'll do. Literally, I can edit what we're saying right now. It won't ever show.
Like it's gone forever?
Like I'm magical as shit.
Man.
All right, let's name it today's podcast, some magical shit. We're going to do some magic shit up in here today.
Let's go. That's what season two is all about.
Season two is a roller coaster of magic.
It is. So as you came in today, we were talking a little bit about...
You got your computer ready. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, no, I got questions from callers. Why do I always say callers?
Nobody's called in. We don't have a phone. Our phones are off.
I could give your phone number out.
You could.
I do say that often. That's true.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I have it opened is I thought, well, okay, if we want to do some of these questions, we still have a couple more we can look at.
Okay.
But when we came to the end of our conversation on Wednesday, we'd been talking a lot about conflict. And this morning, just before we started recording, you had talked about kind of your preference is you really enjoy people who, I think your word was banter. Talk about that again. I thought that was really a cool thing that would get us started today.
I may have mentioned this before, but, and this is not in every relationship, and I don't want everybody that knows me that listens to this to, you know, pick a fight with me.
Right. But
I do enjoy good dialogue that's disagreeable. That maybe not disagreeable, that disagrees.
Right.
I enjoy hearing other people's perspective sometimes, most of the time. And I like asking questions, and I don't really need people to tell me what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm. So if someone comes at you kind of strong with an opinion that is different than yours, or even coming at you saying, oh, Steve, what you said, that's not true. Here's what's true. Da, 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 da. What does that do in you?
It's almost exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good conversation. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. It's going to get heated, not in a violent way, but just like you said, two very different points of view, a disagreement going on.
I'm trying to remember if we ever had one of those in our group. I mean, I'm sure we did, but things we can share.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good observation.
I don't know. I mean, this is controversial.
Okay.
But this is an example that I think of. We may have talked about it one time, but I've said this before. I think this is of all the countries I've been to, you know, half a dozen. This is the best country to live in,
mm-hmm.
and we have some vaults.
Mm-hmm.
I think both can be true. Both are mm-hmm. true. When the whole kneeling for the anthem thing was going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, very controversial. And there was a part of me that I cringed. I'm like, this makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Watching those guys.
Yeah.
And I did not grow up with the way a lot of those guys grew up.
Yeah.
And it was a peaceful protest.
Right.
And so I had friends. I mean, all those things are true.
Right, right.
I mean, pick whatever side you want. I'm not picking a side. I'm just stating mm-hmm. that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong, it's not a prerequisite for a protest to be right. I mean, you can protest something you believe in. Somebody else may disagree. That's what our country was founded on.
Right.
And so, but man, I had friends that just went off the edge on that.
Like worst thing ever.
It's the worst thing. I wouldn't pay those guys. I wouldn't, you know. And okay, that's fine. They're getting paid. They shouldn't want to. And I thought, well, what does getting paid have to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's still your right to peaceful protest. Anyway, that was my point of view.
Uh-huh.
And there's a couple of people I had some good discussions on. And I had some people say, you know, there were folks that really railed against that we should stand up. These guys have fought for our freedom, and I agree with all that, and I'm grateful to all that. I have family members that are in the service. I'm very pro-military.
Right.
Love our military guys and women. And the freedom they fought for is the freedom to protest.
Right.
Peacefully.
Right. Yeah.
So you're gonna tell the folks that the freedom that that somebody fought for and died for, you can't exercise if I disagree with it.
Right. Right. But when those conversations come your way, that's not something you shrivel or draw back from. You're glad just to stay engaged with them pretty much.
I like that sometimes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Not all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things we were talking about earlier today was I think in my family of origin, with my mom's kind of unpredictable behavior, the conflict could become big and even ugly at times. And then just a long life's journey, just kind of some of the relationships I had, coaches I had, man, football coaches in the 70s were just a different breed, you know, and getting slapped upside the head with or without your helmet on. I mean, you know, and then I think even grocery store manager I had and some other people I worked with along life's way who just could lose it in rage. I think there were, it reinforced that story I learned as a little boy is that conflict is really dangerous. Be careful, man. Play small, pull back, accommodate, go along. Mm-hmm. And kind of following up with where we were earlier this week on the previous podcast, I've been reflecting on that, and I think there's times I still can default to that. If somebody has an opinion and they're strong about it, I'll find myself going, "Oh, let me be careful. Let me make the peace. Let me get out of this." But then there's other times when I just go, "No, I really enjoy." Similarly, yeah, I can really enjoy. Man, we see things differently. I think for me, it's all about is the person coming at me or coming at the issue? If they're coming at me, I'm really not interested in those conversations too much. I allowed too much of that to happen in my early life.
Did you have a lot of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People who, in their unhealth, they couldn't stay focused on the issue, so it became very personal about me.
For example?
Instead of saying, I think my old grocery store manager, you know, who was one of the, in many ways, was a great influence on me, taught me an ethic of hard work, reinforced what my dad had taught me, but who just was so unpredictable. So instead of coming and saying, "Hey, you know, the way you set that display up at the top of the aisle doesn't look really good. We need to redo it." He would come and go, "What a dumbass. How could you be so stupid? Why can't you ever do what I tell you to do? I told you, and now look at you." You know, it was just personal attack after personal attack. So, you know, you learn pretty early in life, man, I don't really think I'm that dumb. And I don't think I did it that different from what you really told me. But wow, you're seeing it now and you don't like it. And so I think it was when it moved from being, "Hey, there's an issue we need to address," to it became personal. And that's what I see in my office all the time in marriages is conflict styles that move from the issue to they start attacking each other. They pull up stuff from the past. They character assassinate. They name call. And for me, I think, again, early in life, I learned that's so not safe. I don't want to be a part of that.
Did you get a lot of that as a pastor?
Not a lot. But there were moments, there were heated moments in any of the churches I worked in where people weren't getting their way on something or a decision was made that people didn't appreciate, and what would start as a conversation about the topic at times, and I would say not the majority of times, but at times could devolve into a personal attack at me or at elders or people that I served with. And just, you know, again, it was personal versus staying on the topic.
Does something come to mind when I say that?
Yeah, a lot of them. But I don't know what I want to talk about them.
No, you don't have to talk about them. But I'm just wondering if a specific instance comes to mind.
Oh, yeah. There's one that was so clear. And it's interesting because we were in a room with probably 40 people, and the topic was controversial. And one person stood up, and the way this person spoke was explaining how I come from a family of strong men, and I know what a strong man looks like. And my dad was strong, and my dad worked with so-and-so, a super famous person, right? And my dad was this, and my dad was that. And so I know strong men, and you men aren't strong men. And generally in me, I would just kind of cower to that. I don't know why, but that day it's like something snapped in me. I said, and I probably got a little personal, but I was defending too that, you know, that's so not cool. But yeah, I can't tell the details of that one. But
that's too bad.
Oh, it's a great story. It's a great story. Off air, I'll tell you. It's hilarious. But yeah. So I do have those moments. But anyway, it was just cool thinking about even just non-conflictual conversation. I think how quickly you are fine saying, "Oh, this is a disagreement. I can stay in it." And how I think that's something I've had to learn through the years. And it just seems like that came to you early on in life.
I will say most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm picturing my wife and kids listening to this. They may have a different opinion on that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I am when I'm not healthy, I can get loud and, you know, just talk over somebody and kind of win my point by force.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So I do that.
Yeah. I did that as a parent.
Jen would say, "Hey, make sure you're clear on that."
Yeah.
But you don't, you know. But in terms of, I'm thinking more in the context of conversation with friends.
Mm-hmm.
I can usually have controversial conversations that are, you know, we'll laugh and, you know, a lot of them are silly about sports or whatever, but, some of them are, you know, current event related or the one on the example I just gave. And I feel pretty neutral on that example, but in my brain, I just didn't see I understand the passion behind it.
Right.
Really on both sides. Mm-hmm. And my thought was that, man, how do we come together and try to, and there was there were some stories that didn't make the headlines. There was a lot of good that came from that. Mm-hmm. In terms of, there were several cities, that had athlete, first responder interaction and meetings and, you know, town hall things and even efforts in the community that it went past that. And so, you know, of course, take away the fringe on either side. There was some good stuff that happened.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
That was a rearview mirror moment, what you just did when you said, you know, I can see the good points on both sides. I think some of that comes with age, where you're able to look back and go, you know, in my 30s, I was so militant about one way or the other, it seemed like, you know. And I don't know, I think what I'm loving about this season of life is being able to go, yeah, I can see that side, but I can see that side. And there's a lot of people that don't like when you can see both sides, I've discovered.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dogma in your 20s and 30s. And it's funny to watch my son and his kid and his friends kick around sports stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This, they've been the best team, you know, all year. And it just, it's really, it's funny just to watch them.
Yeah.
The heated debates on that. But yeah, I don't find myself feeling that passionately about things at this age as I did at 30 or as strongly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stirred something in you the other day, we were talking about this Wednesday, is this talk you heard Sunday. And you said it really even moved you. It was a talk for men and fathers. It was Father's Day at church. And you heard a guy. Tell him a little about what that stirred in you.
Guy named John Deloney. Don't know him. I'd never heard of him.
He's a Ramsey personality.
Okay.
Yep. Works with Dave down there.
All right. Evidently, I did a little reading about him, a couple of PhDs, and, you know, seems like a very well-spoken, thoughtful guy. Mm-hmm. I thought a couple of things struck me, and I was listening to it, and I missed the first part, so I may have missed some of the introductory part, but he was pretty vulnerable speaking in front of a church.
Mm-hmm.
Much more vulnerable, in my opinion, than you usually hear from the pulpit.
Yeah, yeah.
Specifically, you know, we may have to edit this out too, but I mean, my observation is a lot of times when pastors or speakers are attempting to share their own foibles from the pulpit.
Yeah.
The worst thing you get is I was speeding on the interstate the other day.
Right. Or I left my socks beside my bed, my dirty socks.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, to which most guys do what you just did right there, roll their eyes. Like, you got to be kidding me, man.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Now, as a pastor, you can't share your dirty laundry with an entire congregation.
Why
I get
not?
That. Maybe you can.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Maybe that's not the best forum.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's up for debate. But, this guy shared some stuff that was just, I thought it was moving. Yeah. And so that was one thing. The second thing was, he just talked about the pressure. Yeah. That a man.
For fathers and men. Yeah.
Men feel as husbands and fathers and, you know, sons and, different aspects that shows up, aspects of life that shows up, feelings associated with that. And so, several points were good. I won't be able to remember them, but I just remember feeling, okay, that guy's,
he knows me.
He's one of us.
Yeah. I went after Wednesday when you were talking about it, I listened to it yesterday and man, I really enjoyed it.
What'd you think?
I really enjoyed hearing him. And I do think you're right. I think there's a lot of vulnerability. You know, even something as silly as, I think this was one of his opening stories. He talked about, he was hiking with his son, who's 15, cross-country guy, and John did something, I forget if he stepped in a hole or stepped off the path or something, and he said, and I just let one fly. And they were on a run together, and so the son kept doing the run. When he got back to the car, wherever, the son said, "Dad, I've never heard you say that word before." And so even just how he confessed that, like, you know, man, there's this part of being human, part of being father is that, you know, the kids see the good, bad, and ugly. And but I really did appreciate, I felt like he was very empathic to dads of the weight. One of the other stories he told that I just thought, man, it's a powerful image. He said is that he asked this question, he goes, "How many of you men woke up this morning and the first thing you did was, you know, deep sigh, deep groan?" And then he just said, "You know, that's not knees and ankles and hips. That's the weight that a man carries." And I just thought that's a very compassionate way to talk about all the pressures that men are feeling. And then I thought it's beautiful how he kind of integrated too, even what this whole technology world is doing to men's sense of competency. You know, you go back a generation and your competency was what you could do with your hands. And, you know, he talked about, I remember growing up in the 70s going to shop class. Did you have shop class?
I did.
Yeah, yeah. I remember going to shop class where you
can
learned.
Can you imagine
some,
me in shop class?
No, you have all fingers still, right? No, but you know, but there was something about, even then educationally, we were trying to teach certain life skills for men. And just how those things are of a bygone era now. And then he even brought up, you know, just what the whole AI world is doing, where dads who, you know, kind of the mark of a father for years has been dads know something. Well, kid doesn't need to ask dad. I can just, you know, type something in my phone or my computer and bang, there's 17 answers to the question that I was going to ask dad. And he just talks about how that weightiness compared with providing, protecting, all that in a culture that's kind of like, watch out for the misogynistic approach. Watch out for these men who are just being abusive when men are just trying to go, "I'm just trying to have a positive influence." And I thought it was super compassionate to say a lot of the sighs may not be about, you know, knees and ankles, but they may be just about, man, there's a weight that a man's going, what does it mean to walk well in this day and age?
You know, and he even talked about the early years, you know, in school as a boy, sit down and be quiet. Well, very few boys want to do that. If you couldn't do that, you were diagnosed, you know, ADHD.
Right.
If you did sit down and were quiet, then the rest of the boys would call you names.
Right, right.
Because you were whatever.
You were going to be weak. You weren't going to have masculinity.
Right. And he also mentioned that, you know, then art and music became electives, like when the important stuff was done, you know, the math and science. Then you moved on to art and music. I thought, man, that is so true. And I was quieter in school and, you know, was a good athlete, but I was still quieter. Yeah. I wasn't in the, as my buddy calls it, the grab ass boy kind of stuff, you know, where the boy stands in line and they can't help but hit the other one. That was not me.
Yeah.
And, but you were labeled based on that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And thought, man, those, you know, just things that don't dawn on you.
Yeah.
Just as a kid and just trying to navigate that, find some worth and importance and all that.
When you were growing up, just top of my head question here, when you were growing up, where did you find vision, for want of a better word, that's probably not the best word, but a vision or a role model of what it's going to mean to become a man one day? You know, I'm growing up as just a little boy doing my thing, but where were the guys that you're looking at going, "Hey, ooh, that's attracting me. That's something I want to be like one day." Did you have much of that in your world?
I don't remember a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're saying, I've never been, I want to say this the right way. If somebody presents an idea to me, I can visualize where it can go. I never thought a lot about my life in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Lived in the moment.
Well, maybe.
Okay.
For whatever reason, my brain just doesn't work that way very well. And so I didn't grow up thinking, man, if I want to have a family and be a good dad, I need to do X. I just thought, no, one day I'll get married and then I'll have kids. And
right.
So looking at somebody saying, "I want to be like that," I don't know that that even computes with me, really.
Yeah.
Now, I had men in my life, grandfathers, uncle, that were close to me that I loved and that I respected. And I have real affinity towards and had toward.
Yeah. Yeah.
So later in life, there were a couple of guys that particularly with as it relates to faith, there were a couple of guys I go, okay, that's a little bit different. That's a faith I can get my head around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
I have this memory when we were talking about this of being, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 young and being at some Memorial Day probably or maybe 4th of July parade in my little hometown. And I can remember, and I remember feeling this for a number of years, that when the guys in uniform would come by, there was something in me that thought, ooh, that's what, it's like, I don't know if I thought these words, but wow, that's what a man is. You know, there was something about them that represented strength and courage and discipline. You know, everything was so pressed, their clothing was, you know, they everything was just put together. And so I think early in life, there was this part of me going, ooh, that looks like something that I want to be. But I didn't have anybody ever really putting words to what it means to pass from boyhood to manhood at some point in life. Like you, I think I just kind of, okay, I got up today and I lived another day, you know?
Yeah.
I know for both of us, you know, in our probably 30s, early 40s, we were exposed to some teaching that in real time had some pretty powerful impact on just kind of going, man, here's some clarity about what it means to be a man. And I think it's interesting as I look at where I am now in this season of my life and I look back on that, a lot of good in it. I never want to throw it out, the baby out with the bathwater. But there were other parts about it that just created almost this like shame and this sense of, oh my gosh, there's this standard. And if you don't hit the standard this way, that's not going to be a man. And it's just interesting. I wonder when I look at my little grandsons, you know, who are, you know, all six years old and under, I just think, outside of their fathers, you know, I wonder what's the model of growing up that they're going to find in this culture? You know, what does it mean to be a man? Again, thinking back to what John was talking about, what does it mean to be a man? That's the thing I wish he would have given us a little bit toward the end. I was like, so, hey, here's some next steps, or here's what it looks like to be a man, you know?
It's interesting you say that, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but part of what
I'm learning to disagree.
Okay, let's do that. Let's disagree a little bit on that. Part of what I liked about it was there's no action steps at the end. For whatever reason, that drives me crazy sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, I thought he did such a good job, and I thought, okay, this is just something to sit in for a minute.
Yeah. Just being descriptive and not prescriptive. Just like, this is what's true, but I'm not going to prescribe to you what you need to do about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right.
You know what I mean?
For Sunday morning, that's great.
Well, I think even for regular life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are people, you know, if there are people listening, there are some that are listening going, just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Well, part of what to do, I think, is to think. Mm-hmm. And to be and to sit for a minute, mm-hmm. and go, okay, what is, I don't think you needed him to tell you, what does my son need? What does my daughter need?
Yeah.
You know, and not to discount the practical altogether, but I just think that's so prevalent, you know, they're just, we're always looking for a step-by-step.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there's just let's just digest the information. And filter it through what God may be saying to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the robotic nature of step by step. And I think what I would say is, I think there are so many men, you know, we talk about a father wound or an absent father. There's so many men in our culture who didn't have anybody calling them toward what does it look like to take responsibility for things, that I think I see a lot of men. And it's part of my story, I think, growing, who had no clue how to even begin to answer that question of what does a good man look like? What does a good father look like? What is a, you know, I talking with a young man recently who just said, man, I don't feel shame about this, but the truth is I don't know how to parent a child. The way I was parented wasn't too cool. I lived in constant fear and terror of my dad. And so now I got this little boy and I'm trying to parent him and I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And so I think what you're saying is good. Yeah, sit with it, consider it. But I think there's some people who are raising their hand saying, hey, I'm open to some thoughts. I'm open to some kicking around some suggestions, mm-hmm. some ideas, you know? So I think I'm probably on that side of it, which is my wiring of, man, what are the tools, you know? But I appreciate you saying there's something good about just sitting with the, yes, life is heavy, life is hard. Mm. I want to be aware of I've talked about the blessings and the cursings that my parents passed on to me. You know, what were the good things and the hard things that my dad did with me? And I want to be really intentional in, you know, and I wish I would have been more intentional, maybe the way I should say it, looking in the rear view. I wish I'd been more intentional in going, hang on a minute, my kids need to figure some things out on their own. I don't, being there doesn't mean I always have to quote unquote, spout the words of wisdom to them. So I think that's a balance for a lot of dads. And again, this is where that connected for me with John's talk is that I think one of the pressures I felt as a dad was, oh my gosh, I don't want my kids to grow up not feeling equipped like I did. Therefore I've got to give a whole lot of, you know, thoughts, ideas, options, to help my kids be prepared for life. Yes, exactly. Instead of being able to go, man, okay, how are you going to navigate that now, son? You know, I wish I would have asked more questions instead of always having the right, quote unquote, right, answers.
That fits with your personality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so.
You know, the Enneagram 7 stress and 1, you like information.
Get in my head.
You give information.
Get in my head. Yeah, and get in my head.
Direction, clarity.
Yep.
As my buddy that's a 1 says, to be clear is to be kind.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a 1, didn't it?
I think you quoted that from somebody else's parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know that I needed direction. I mean, I probably did need some direction, but I think for me anyway, direction comes with credibility.
Yeah.
You know, like, as my same friend says, if you have standing in my life, then I may look to you for some direction.
Yeah.
If you don't, I'm probably not.
Yeah. 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 Well, and it's that age old adage too, that, you know, I wish I would have had in front of my face more as a father, that kids don't do what they tell them to do. They do what they see us do. You know, the what we're actually doing is what they're looking at is modeling them. Oh, so that's how you handle that situation. You know, so when I would be a jerk to, you know, I think Deloney talked about this, didn't he? You know,
It was a great example.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
how do you jerk
in a restaurant? Yeah.
Well, but he was doing when he was talking about doing an internship with a psychologist younger than him,
They
talked about
good memory.
They went to the rooms and he left with one of the kids. He said, "Man, how do I get them to be respectful to women?" And the guy said, "Well, you can say whatever you want; doesn't matter."
Yeah.
They're going to watch what you do.
Right. I thought that's why that was so fresh in my brain. Yeah.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to, they're super intuitive.
Yeah. I loved, thanks for reminding me. I loved too when he said, you know, you kind of have this option. You're in the restaurant, you get bad service from the waitress or the waiter or whatever. And, you know, it's really easy just to badmouth them and belittle them, what a terrible job they're doing, what a crappy job they're doing. Or what if you say to your kids, I think he said something like this, what if you say to your kids, man, looks like they're having a tough day. Hey, why don't we triple the tip and really take care of them, try to bless their day? And I thought, gosh.
Yeah, and it was great. And at least in the one I was listening to today, looks like somebody didn't show up for their shift and she's having to cover two or three.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so, I think we're guilty a lot of the times with that, of just not thinking like what actually could be going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A minute in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah. I haven't even shown you this yet, but I had a dad shoot a video to me, little video he created last night, and I need to share it with you, but he was just talking about the podcast and how much he appreciated one of our conversations. I guess this one was a couple of months ago is my guess. We talked a little bit about parenting then too. And there was something that one of us had said about just, you know, seeing things that happen that are wrong and not immediately jumping to correction, but just trying to see what all is going on behind it. And so he's got young boys. He's got a house full of little boys. And he came home from work and they had literally just taken shovels and rakes and had torn up part of the backyard. I mean, they just got after it. And he said, you know, my immediate blush was like, oh my gosh, what have you done in my beautiful yard? And then he said, I just thought about what we had talked about on the podcast. And so he went to him that night in the room and he said, hey, guys, tell me about what you were doing with those shovels and rakes. It looks like you were having a blast. And the boys were telling him, we were trying to build this, we were trying to dig that. And he said, oh, I remember doing that as a boy. It's so much fun, isn't it? And so then he transitioned to that to going, hey, well, I noticed you left all the tools in the backyard. So before we go to bed, we need to pick those tools up. We need to put them up because we want to take care of our tools so we can do digging again some other day. And the boy's like, oh, okay, Dad. And he said, and the place where you dug probably wasn't the best place to dig. The best place to dig. So in the morning, and I'll be there and I'll help you do this, but in the morning, we're going to fill in all those holes and we're going to rake it back out so we can keep grass growing there. And I just thought, gosh, that's a brilliant moment of sitting in the moment and not feeling like I've got to run to correction so quickly. Mm-hmm. I can just be curious and sit with my kids and realize, okay, they were having fun.
Right. And I wonder too, when did the yard become a sanctuary?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was growing up, the front and backyards were where you played.
Right.
And now they're a, you know, it's a monument.
Yeah. Oh.
Can't walk in it. Can't do anything in it. Mm-hmm. It's out of my yard. Don't ride your bike. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it can be.
And so,
yeah.
Again, for a kid, and I get that they tore up the yard, flower beds and all that, but, I mean, it's what kids do.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
It was a great response.
Yeah, yeah. When you said that, I remember Jacob and Jonathan, our younger two, came home from work one day, and they would probably tell this story differently, but the way I remember it, so guys, you're welcome to correct me later, but the way I remember it is I came home from work and they had dug a good sized hole in the backyard close to our deck in our backyard. And I went over to it and it was like, I could tell it was big enough to plant like a decent sized shrub in. So they had been getting after it, and they're probably 6 and 8 at the time, not super old. And well, I said, so guys, what are y'all up to? I think they said I lost it and blew up at them. I don't remember doing that, but it would be my character in those days. But when I finally found out what they were doing, they were in the process of digging a hole to China.
Oh.
Yeah. So I really shouldn't have stopped them. They were up to something really good. That has no point. I just remember that story when we were talking about my buddy and his boys. Fatherhood, heavyweight, good weight. I appreciated John's words. I really did. And I love how you're saying it. Just maybe if you didn't hear it, and you can find that and hear it sometime, that'd be it's just a good place to think about the weight that men carry. And,
I would recommend it even if you're, if you're not a man.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's good for, you mentioned this too, daughters, mothers, wives to think about, hey, this is, it's just be aware. Like we talked about that a lot in a lot of areas. Just be aware that this is, and men, be aware that, your wife's bearing a lot of burdens with you. Mm-hmm. Your kids, we create weight for our kids, I think, in a good and bad way sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I did appreciate the thing he did. Early on, he talked about that, the verse where Jesus says, come unto me, all you are weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. And he said something like, man, I've struggled to believe that most of my life.
I don't think most guys believe that.
Can Jesus really do that? But I loved how he came full circle with that by the end of his talk and said that, he reached a point where he realized that the stuff that was coming out of him, and I think his part of it was connected to his relationship with his daughter, that he didn't like where it was. And his wife made this beautiful confrontation to him about just, man, You're kind, you're a good father, best father I know. Beautiful words, affirming, but then also said, but there's a, do you remember what the phrase was? There's like a raging furnace in your chest or something.
Yeah, we all know it. There's like a nuclear reactor
That was it, yeah. And we all know it and feel it. And that led him to a place of going, man, I've got to do some deeper work. And so he said he had a meeting with some lady, if I remember, 62-year-old lady or something. But in the middle of that, realizing that, gosh, my path forward really is to open my hands and surrender and say, okay, I'm going to try to come to you. I'm going to try to believe that you might have rest for me. And I just appreciated that sense of going, part of fatherhood, it's kind of like what you were saying about just sitting in it, part of fatherhood, part of, and motherhood for that matter, but is getting to a place of going, I can't do this on my own. We talk about our recovery brothers and sisters all the time. Man, I have to accept that I can't do this by myself. I have to surrender. I have to open my hands. I have to be willing to go, I need help. And I really appreciated that, the encouragement of going, there comes a time where you just go, I need more than what I can do.
I think the phrase that stuck with me overall on that talk was just lay it down.
Yeah.
And I don't interpret lay it down to mean do nothing.
Right.
It's just, there's a big difference between working and working because you think you control everything. And it's hard. And that's a learned skill over a lifetime too, I think it's not, I don't know that in God's economy, it's cause and effect necessarily. There are things, you do reap what you sow, but even that's, you don't always reap what you sow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we reap mercy.
Right.
And so there are things I need to do today. Mm-hmm. And the outcome ultimately is not in my control. Right. Right. Too many things I can't control.
Right. That's that surrender word again.
And so it's not a passivity. Mm-hmm. It's just a relinquishing of the control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's good. That's good. Well, good conversation as always.
Yeah. Is that it?
I think. Okay. You got anything else?
Nope.
All right. Well, then we're good for the day.
All right.
See you.